Join us now for the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Today's message was preached during a business luncheon held on the university campus. Following the introduction by Dr. Aaron Goldsmith, our speaker will be Dr. Chris Martin, Chairman of the Division of Accounting at BJU. The title of his message is Prudence and Discretion in Business. The text is from Philippians chapter 1, verse 10.
Today, our speaker is Dr. Chris Martin. Dr. Martin is chairman of our Division of Accounting here at the university, and he'll be speaking today on prudence and direction in business. Dr. Martin.
Thank you all for coming out today. I know it's gotten nice and cool, so maybe it's a good excuse to be indoors right now with this weather. The continuing education classes that I sometimes have to go to, this is about the time when the speaker steps up here that people usually pull out the Wall Street Journals and the laptops, and I'm hoping that won't be true today. I'm hoping you'll at least keep eating or something and pretend like you're listening. Or as we heard earlier in the year at one of our meetings with Dr. Horton, he said he does some intellectual multitasking sometimes while the speaker is up front. So that's acceptable as well as we talk. I am going to talk today about prudence and discretion in business. And this, again, we're using the book that's for sale out in the front lobby there. If you're interested, we're just going through chapter by chapter, and if you're interested there, you can kind of get a head start on what the next speaker is going to be speaking about. My dad always loved chess. In 1972, there was a big world chess championship that he followed very carefully between an American named Bobby Fischer and a Russian named Boris Spassky. When I say that he followed the games, I mean that every day the newspaper came, he got the newspaper, cut out the page that said all the chess moves, and he sat down with his chess board and went through every single move, one at a time, trying to decide what he would have done. I think Dad was one of the first people who bought one of those little chess boards that had a computer built into, where you make your move and you tell the computer what you did, and then it plays, and you know, he'd play against the computer when he couldn't talk one of his sons into playing with him. Dad was also especially interested in the late 1990s when the then current world chess champion, a guy named Kasparov, took on an unusual opponent. Now, when I play chess, I'll look at the board and I will study a particular move, and I'll think about what would happen if I do that, what would they do, and you know, I can look ahead a little bit, but it takes me forever to do that. I read somewhere on a website that Kasparov, they suspect that when he plays, he can analyze three moves per second. He can see the board and see what's going to happen. Well, in this case, his opponent was faster. Kasparov also was known for his stare. He would intimidate his opponents. He'd make his move, and then he would just sit back and stare. But his stare didn't intimidate this opponent that he had agreed to play. In a regulation chess tournament, Deep Blue, a computer program written by five IBM programmers, was set to play Kasparov. Now, Deep Blue could analyze a lot more moves than Kasparov could even. In fact, it's estimated, one place I saw, that Deep Blue could analyze 200 million moves per second. It would take Kasparov, I figured, 25 months of nonstop analysis, second by second, every second of the day for 25 months, to do what that computer could do in 1 second. In the strange way of scoring in the chess championship, Deep Blue won that playoff 3.5 to 2.5. And then Deep Blue promptly retired from active chess tournaments. I have to speculate here, but I suspect maybe Deep Blue is now in some university teaching chess somewhere. It's the best I can figure. What would life be like if we could look at every decision we had to make and instantly consider even 200 possible outcomes? Would we make the right decision every time? Would we be able to avoid all the wrong choices if we could analyze that far in advance? Based on what we know about human nature, we know that man would still make the wrong choices most of the time because the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Life's decisions are not a simple programming task with yes and no answers. And our moral filters are sin-ruined. And we often just choose not to consider the possible outcome of our actions. Today I want to talk about prudence and discretion. The word prudence comes originally from a Latin word meaning seeing ahead. Now, I'm going to go off script here just a minute. I'm looking at these desserts you have in front of you. And if we saw ahead into the future, we might decide it probably would be a good idea not to eat that dessert. And in fact, if any of you are thinking that, I'd be happy to take those with you with me when we finish. Although I'm not talking, I am talking about prudence today, there's another word that is closely related, and that's the word providence. It actually comes from the same Latin root, and it's usually used to describe God. God sees ahead and works his plan perfectly. The word discretion comes from another Latin word that means to separate. So we could summarize the meanings of these two related words by saying that we are looking ahead to be able to separate or distinguish possible results. The Apostle Paul says something similar to that in Philippians 1:10. He says that we are to approve things that are excellent. And Strong's Concordance states that this verse means we are to distinguish between the good and the evil, lawful and unlawful, or to approve things that excel. Here are some other definitions that I found related to the concepts of prudence and discretion. First, discretion is an intellectual habit enabling us to see in any given juncture of human affairs what is virtuous and what is not, and how to come at the one and avoid the other. We see similar concepts in a couple of verses in Proverbs, familiar verses. Proverbs 22:3 says, "A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished." Proverbs 12:16 says, "A fool's wrath is presently known, but a prudent man covereth shame." And a related verse, Proverbs 19:11, "The discretion of a man deferreth his anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression." Here's another description. Prudence supposes the value of the end to be assumed and refers only to the adaptation of the means. It is the relation of right means for given ends. I teach accounting students. Let's assume for just a minute that a goal of every accounting student is to become gainfully employed after they graduate. What is the right way to obtain that valuable end? Well, of course, they need to pay attention in class. They need to study for the tests. They need to possibly get an internship if they can. But their ability to succeed at that task that they've chosen for themselves is also dependent on things like learning how to speak in front of a crowd, learning how to speak one-on-one with a client, or learning how to write down a summary of what they've just learned from something. They have to combine all of that to achieve that desired end. Prudence, according to the definition I just saw there, is the ability of that student to achieve the desired end through the right means. And still another definition. Discretion is the ability to avoid words, actions, and attitudes which could result in undesirable consequences. Do we see any examples today of people who engage in words, actions, attitudes that end up resulting in something they didn't want to happen? Sure we do. I have a brother who has several children, and they are what we call high-maintenance children. They're the kinds who are always going to be getting into trouble. One of my nephews, just one example of the many things they get into, he was about 2 or 3 years old. He was at a restaurant. We were with them, and he was sitting in his high chair, one of those little wooden high chairs, and he decided he would try to balance on the back of the high chair. So he stood up before we could do anything, stood up, tried to step on the back, and fell off and hit his head. It did turn out that he had a concussion. They found out about an hour later after they had left. They were visiting us. They left. But here is an example of a child who didn't foresee the consequences of his action. We also see examples with teenagers. Teenagers many times will smoke despite warnings of the long-term dangers of lung cancer. Sometimes they will drive too fast, even after watching maybe some of those films we saw in Driver's Ed. My son is 16 right now, and we're just dreading the day when he's out on his own driving that car. It scares me to death. Teens also take drugs, not even realizing the short-term consequences of that action. But is it just children and teens who lack discretion? Recently, Mel Gibson made an anti-Semitic remark in public while under the influence of alcohol. He had to publicly apologize for his words, and he enrolled himself in an alcohol abuse rehabilitation program. His words led to undesirable consequences. This last summer, I was following carefully the Tour de France, and Floyd Landis tested positive for illegal performance-enhancing drugs while he was winning the most recent Tour de France. If it ends up that he is stripped of that yellow jersey, he will demonstrate that actions can lead to undesirable consequences. We also heard recently of Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter. Every time he goes out on one of his adventures, he realizes there are risks involved. And yet, in spite of that, in recent days, remember, he was killed when a stingray hit him with one of the barbs. Can we even count the number of politicians who have had to resign from office after admitting to adultery, bribery, influence peddling, other illegal or immoral activities? And in business, former Enron CEO Jeffrey Skilling was just sentenced 2 days ago to over 24 years in prison. His attitude towards Enron's investors and his resulting actions led him down a road that he now surely regrets. Socrates is one of the first writers to organize moral virtues into categories, and later religious leaders speculated further on how we should organize these different virtues that we're talking about through this series. Some great thinkers of the past suggest that virtues should be separated into three broad categories: God-given virtues, like faith, hope, and charity, the cardinal virtues, which would include courage, temperance, mercy or justice, and today's topic, prudence, the four cardinal virtues on which the other virtues are hinged or hang. And then the last category that they sometimes use is the capital virtues. And this would include things like humility, meekness, diligence, other character qualities that we generally equate with good behavior. I also found some interesting quotations that describe prudence and discretion. Aesop, in one of his fables, states that it is but common prudence to see our way out before we venture in. Cicero's opinion was that prudence is the knowledge of things to be sought and those to be shunned. And apologies to any of you who speak German in here, but Goethe, the German poet and playwright, wrote, "Wer sich nicht nach der Decke streckt, dem bleiben die Füße unbedeckt." Or from my own translation, if you stretch out under the electric blanket in the morning, your feet are going to be freezing. Gambetta, a French lawyer and statesman from the 1800s, stated that great ability without discretion comes almost invariably to a tragic end. As Christians, we must remember several things about these so-called moral virtues. First of all of these virtues are God-given in the sense that we are all created in God's image. Adam and Eve were created with perfect moral virtue, but their sin started a downward spiral that we are all still affected by today. The Bible tells us in Isaiah that all we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to our own way. Adam's sin has been passed down from generation to generation, and we are all then inherently sinners. We also read in James that every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. Virtues that we demonstrate in our lives are not because of how good we are inherently, but because of how great and merciful God is to mankind. Ephesians 1:8 says that God has abounded toward us in all wisdom and prudence, demonstrating that God's grace is the key to our prudence. There's something else we need to remember about moral virtues. Because God created all of us in His image, and because every good thing is from God, even non-Christians can demonstrate courage, temperance, mercy, prudence. But these virtuous or ethical actions will do no good if a man or woman has not first accepted God's free gift of salvation through Jesus Christ. In accounting classes, I teach something called the accounting equation. And I usually say it in a big voice. And that says that assets must equal liabilities and owner's equity. However, when we get to the end of our lives, God will not weigh our good and our bad and find out which is more. Only the work of Jesus on the cross can outweigh our sin. Do we see prudence and discretion described or demonstrated in the Bible? Of course we do. The first example that comes to mind is the example of Christ himself. In one instance, the religious leaders tried to trick Jesus in the interpretation of religious dogma. Jesus looked ahead, saw where the leaders were trying to take him, and avoided the pitfalls. He demonstrated perfect discretion. When the leaders tried to lure Jesus into taking an anti-government stance related to whether he should pay taxes or not, Jesus saw the hypocrisy of the leaders, provided the classic example of a prudent response when he said, "Give to the government what belongs to the government, and give to God what belongs to God." We also see examples in humans in the Bible where they demonstrated the kind of discretion that can only come from God. And today I want to spend the rest of my time talking for a few minutes about Joseph, described in Psalm 105, 17 to 22, as one sent by God to bring Israel to Egypt. He demonstrated growth and discretion throughout his life. We can see at least four areas of Joseph's life where he exhibited godly discretion, four areas where we need to watch in our own lives. First of all, Joseph demonstrated prudence in maintaining his purity. You all know the story, where Joseph was sold by his own brothers into captivity. The people who bought him took him to Egypt. They sold him to a man named Potiphar. Instantly, in God's providence, Potiphar recognized Joseph as a very strong leader. And he immediately elevated him among the slaves. It sounds from the reading of the scripture that he almost was no longer a slave there. And it says that Potiphar didn't even know what was going on in his house. He evidently had a very large household. Didn't know what was going on because Joseph did everything in the house. And you also know the story of Potiphar's wife trying to get Joseph to commit adultery. And we see in Joseph's response to that, that he had the right attitudes, the right words, the right actions to show his discretion. In Genesis 39:9, Joseph says, "How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" He recognized his attitude was, first of all, that what she was asking him to do was great wickedness. It was sin. But he also recognized that it was not just sin against Potiphar, against his master. It was sin against God. He saw that he had that attitude before he made this statement. And that allowed him to demonstrate discretion in what he said. But then we also know when she kept after him and kept after him, one time he was in the house by himself, and she tried one more time. And we know what happened. Genesis 39:12 says he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. His actions demonstrated his discretion. He knew what the ultimate end would be if he did what she wanted him to do. He could see that in the future, in a sense, that would be the ultimate outcome. And he said, "That's not what God wants for me." Of course, he got thrown in prison because of that. Potiphar threw him in prison. And the next time we see him, he's in prison. And instantly, what happens to him? He becomes the leader of the prison. Very quickly, you find out he's almost not like a prisoner. He is running the prison, except for the prison leader. He is the next one there. And the butler and the baker get thrown in prison, and they have a dream. Actually, Joseph had experience with dreams, right? When he was a boy, he told his dreams to his brothers, and they didn't like that. At the time, all he did, from what we see in Scripture, he didn't tell the interpretation of the dream. He just said what his dream was. He didn't give much after that. And we actually see some growth in his discretion, even as he's now in prison, interpreting the dreams of these two men. I've always thought it was interesting that the butler came to him first. Can you imagine what would happen if it had been the other way around? The baker comes and tells him this dream, and Joseph says, "You're going to be dead in 3 days." We'd never hear the butler story, would we? But in God's providence, the butler came first. The butler told his dream, and Joseph said, you're going to be restored to your position in 3 days. And then we know the story about the baker as well. But he went on to say, not only is this going to happen, but when you get to that place, don't forget me. He's growing in his discretion. He recognizes that just telling, giving the advice, you might say here, is not enough. He wants to also put in that man's mind, hey, I'm still down here. Of course, the butler forgot him. And the Bible tells us that 2 years passed and Pharaoh had a dream. The king of Egypt had a dream that no one could interpret. And suddenly the butler says, ah, now I remember. There was this man who helped me, who gave me advice when I needed help. And Joseph was able to come before Pharaoh and use discretion in the advice he gave. Remember the story of the 7 fat cows and the 7 skinny cows and the 7 ears of corn and the 7 ears of corn. You know the story. And what did Joseph say? God has given me the ability to do this. In Genesis 41:16, he says, God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And Genesis 41:25, a few verses later, God hath showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. Once again, Joseph has the right attitude. He understands that what his gifts are not his gifts. They are God-given gifts. And he constantly is pushing the glory to God. Proverbs 3:5-6, trust in the Lord with all thine heart, lean not unto thine own understanding, in all thy ways acknowledge him. And what will happen? He'll direct your paths. Joseph couldn't have said that up till then. He knew it was true, but up till then, everything seemed to be going wrong. But he kept making sure that God was the one getting the glory. He had the right attitude there. And of course, in Genesis 41:33-36, it describes Joseph's advice to Pharaoh. He said, this is what you need to do. He didn't just say, 7 bad years are coming after a while. He said, you need to do something about it. He gave advice to Pharaoh. And we know what Pharaoh decided, right? Pharaoh in the 39th verse there, Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. How old was Joseph when that happened? He was 30 years old. At 30 years old, all we had seen up to that point, for the most part, was bad things. And yet at 30 years old, God finally shows that all along he had been working just for this point in time. Okay, so here we have Joseph demonstrating his prudence in maintaining his purity, Joseph showing his prudence in giving his advice in the interpretation of the dreams, and this actually leads us to the third way that he demonstrated his prudence, and that was in managing his organization. Many of you are involved in businesses, and this is something every day we have to deal with. What did Joseph have to do? When I started thinking about this, it occurs to me that this was a staggering, monumental task. Egypt was a huge country, and he was supposed to gather the food. He knew what was going to happen. He did have that advantage. He knew that there was a 7-year business cycle, right? 7 years good, 7 years bad. We don't have that benefit. He knew that from God, but he had to organize this whole thing. He was not the only one. It says he gathered food from all the cities in Egypt and stored it in those cities. He didn't bring it to a central location. He didn't have a Walmart distribution center. In fact, this may have been, I think this may be the first example of a super center in the Bible, because he had to pull it all together and keep it all together in one place. Probably he collected 20% in those first 7 years, 20%, this was his advice to Pharaoh at least, 20% of everything that came out of the land in those years. And he had to store it somewhere. Think of how much he had to store. We can't imagine that as Americans, because this is kind of everyday stuff for us. But back then, they didn't have the kind of facilities we have. They didn't have trucks to bring things from one place to another. They didn't have computers to keep track of where all the stuff was, right? And in fact, it tells us that he collected so much, he left off counting it. He couldn't even keep track of it all. It was so much in those years. He also had to protect the food. Think of people trying to steal it when it got into the bad years. At first, no one really cared. But in those 7 years of famine, people coming, think about the rats. I've always wondered about how he kept the rats out of that corn. These are things he had to concern himself with. He was managing his organization, and he demonstrated his prudence, his ability to see what would be coming in the future by the steps he took. He also demonstrated later prudence in directing his family. Remember when his brothers came in and he hid his identity from them? And I think probably what he was trying to do is to see if they had changed their heart at all. He looked at them. He knew who they were. They didn't have any idea that this could possibly be their brother. It's kind of funny. But now he says, I'm not going to tell them who I am. I want to find out. And in fact, he listened in on their conversations. He didn't let them know that he could speak their language. And he heard them essentially saying, boy, we should not have done that to Joseph. Look where it's gotten us now. And it gave him an indication by his caution and the way he dealt with them. It gave him an indication that, yes, maybe God had changed their hearts. He also demonstrated caution in placing his family when they finally came to Egypt. Remember, he talked to Pharaoh and said, we need a space. There are only 70-something people, I think, that came. And he put them in Goshen, kind of off separate, so their culture wouldn't get mixed up with the culture of the Egyptians. He demonstrated discretion. He saw what could have happened if he had just brought them into the main city. He gave them a special area. I think it's also interesting he demonstrated caution in pre-planning his funeral, but that's another story. While we can't see the ultimate outcome of every decision that we make, and we obviously can't examine 200 million possible outcomes per second, we can ask God to give us discretion in our daily decisions. Like Joseph, we need God's help to allow us to make the right decisions about our purity, to make the right decisions about the advice that we may give from day to day, to make the right decisions about how to manage our organizations, and the right decisions about our families. Let us ask God to give us the gift of discretion as we serve Him here on the earth.
You've been listening to the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Our speaker was Dr. Chris Martin, Chairman of the Division of Accounting at BJU. For a cassette or compact disc copy of today's message, send a check for $6 to Campus Store, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, 29614. Be sure to mention the name of the speaker and today's date. The Chapel Hour has been sponsored by Bob Jones University.